If you looked at the news in the last few days, you would think that all of America is aghast at the Supreme Court's recent decision to overturn its earlier ruling in 1973 of Roe v. Wade. Why should we be pro-life? How do we defend our pro-life position? Megan Allman works with Summit Ministries in Colorado Springs. Dr. Jeff Myers is their president. David Noble was their founder. Summit.org notes, as far as Megan Allman is concerned, she worked as an award-winning journalist until 2008 when she decided to pursue a career speaking and teaching about Christian apologetics, especially in the area of bioethics. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and we're going to talk right now with Megan Allman, who also speaks at a lot of college campuses defending the pro-life position. Megan, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
It is an honor to be with you today. Thank you.
Sure. Just tell us a little bit about your work speaking on different campuses, promoting the pro-life position. I imagine in some of these cases, this is you're speaking to people who don't agree with you on this point.
That's right. That's right. We are a pro-life apologetics training organization. So while I am on faculty with Summit Ministries, I do work with Life Training Institute. And that is exactly what we do. We go and engage people and really equip them on how to talk about these issues well. Because as we've noticed, these conversations tend to get very heated very quickly.
Yeah.
So we try to help people to see what are the key ideas in play here. And can we talk about these things and look at the ideas to see if they make sense while never forgetting that these ideas really do touch real people. And that's the one thing abortion has in common across the board is it causes an immense amount of pain.
Could you go ahead and give the name of that organization again? Not the summit.org, but the other one.
Yes, Life Training Institute. It is just prolifetraining.com. But Scott, the founder and president of Life Training Institute, and myself are both on faculty and work closely with Summit Ministries.
Scott Klusendorf?
That's right.
Oh, okay. My little brother actually illustrated a book one time for Scott Klusendorf. It's a little small book. It's white, but it's got blue borders on part of the cover and stuff. So I don't know if you're familiar with that book, but anyway, okay. So let's go ahead and talk about some of the major arguments that the left uses. For example, my body, my choice. Okay, this is, you know, a fetus is something growing inside a woman. It's not something that, you know, is separate from her body. Or is it?
Right. Well, when somebody brings that one forward, I'm going to need to ask some clarifying questions. It could be that they are making an argument that is assuming in some way, just like you said, Jerry, that what is growing inside the mother is somehow just part of her body. It's not a distinct entity at all. If that's the case, then we have some confusion over the science. We know that the science of embryology, which is an extremely, you know, niche branch of science, it actually deals with the study of embryos. And what it tells us is that from the moment of conception, that you and I and everyone listening, we were all living, distinct, whole human beings. So we weren't part of our mother's body. In fact, we had our own unique genetic code that differed from our mother's and our father's. And the science can go just about as deep as you want it to there. It's actually quite fascinating. But some people, when they make the my body, my choice argument, are arguing from a different place. They are arguing from what autonomy. So the idea that even though it might be scientifically human, and it might even have some value, this unborn entity, the mother's rights, bodily autonomy rights, trump the rights of the unborn child, in which case we're arguing on different grounds. Now, in our country, we kind of have this idea of this really extreme autonomy. We hear people talking about this as if they are free to do with their bodies whatever they want. And we know that that is not the case. There is a givenness to our lives. Just as a Christian, I can tell you, you know, those who are Christ followers understand that our bodies, our lives are not even our own. We submit ourselves to the sovereignty of God. And so even in that sense, we are very limited. And within that those limits, we find true freedom. But even for others who would believe that they can do with their bodies, whatever they want. I'm reminded of a few weeks ago, the headline of some young women who, in the middle of a very public church service, stripped down to the equivalent of bikinis and began chanting this very thing, "My body, my choice," as if they could freely do what they want with their bodies. Now, they were protesting the at that time impending overturn of Roe v. Wade, but they found out very quickly that they're not free to do with their bodies whatever they want. In fact, they were quickly escorted out of the service by security. So the idea that autonomy is the end all is problematic. It assumes several things when it comes to pregnancy. Just very simply, one of the things that it assumes is that pregnancy is not somehow a good thing, which is not generally how we would view it. Pregnancy is not some kind of disease that needs to be eradicated, but this radical autonomy view that kind of lurks behind the "my body, my choice" reasoning assumes that. So again, a lot there. For listeners who are interested in it, I would point to the work of Dr. Francis Beckwith, wonderful reasoner when it comes to these pro-life arguments. He wrote a book called Defending Life and has a chapter in it that deals with this very, very well, but that gives you the crux of it.
It's interesting. I'm sure that the science that we know today in 2022, when we're recording this, is vastly, greater than the science was in 1973. Although, when the Supreme Court made Roe v. Wade, I think they knew deep down that, you know, this was basically an anti-science decision.
I think so, too. I think that what they moved to when they started looking at what does person really mean when we look at the Constitution, they were started making philosophical judgments and kind of poking holes in the question of can we know who counts as a person and who doesn't, which is a strange kind of reasoning, a different kind of argumentation. I think the science didn't really say much differently in 1973. Of course, now what we have with ultrasound technology is the ability to see what the science has been telling us all these years. So it is very different in that way. But you're right, Jerry, the argument has shifted somewhat from what the science tells us, though many still overlook that, to this question of, well, just because someone is human, does that mean they count among the valuable human community? And that is a big question. It's a philosophical question. But the pro-life view answers that very well also.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear some anecdotes from you as far as when you've actually spoken on college campuses, especially when they're hostile, and have you seen any change of hearts and minds? And the reason I even partly bring this up is because I just see these videos where the partisans on the left will just shout down David Horowitz or Don Feder or whatever. The person can't even say anything. And so it's like, oh, gee, you know, so much for free speech. But have
That's
you
right.
seen any positive changes?
I see positive changes in the young people that I work with. And I'll tell you how. First of all, this up-and-coming generation is not just going to settle for a sound bite. They want to know why. Whether it's a pro-life or pro-choice view, they want to know, why should I believe that? And those are good questions. We should always be looking for the reasons for what we believe, and we should be seeking out what's true, what best fits the world around us in terms of reality. So when we make these arguments with young people and offer them reasons, and when we do so graciously, that's the biggest thing. If I get mad or the person I'm talking to gets mad because of me, I'm not going to get anywhere in that conversation. So I have to remember that whether or not the unborn are human and valuable is not up to me or my personal values. That either is true or it isn't true. I do think that it is true. I think it's true the only way that true things matter. And so in that sense, I can defend that and offer reasons for it without losing my cool. And with young people, oftentimes they're coming to me with objections that they feel when it comes to the abortion issue. I think we often forget that when people are talking about abortion, they are most often driven by compassion. And in these cases, compassion for women that they see are hurting in some way or struggling in some way or are afraid, which is often why people seek abortions. So they're offering me these objections. Well, you know, this is a right to privacy. We shouldn't mess with a woman's private decision. I had a young woman the other day tell me that, you know, when women cannot afford to feed more children, who's going to pay for that? Why would you force her to have the pregnancy? I hear often about women who are unable to pursue their educational goals or their dreams, their career goals, because they had an unplanned pregnancy. And then these days, of course, we hear often about how abortions might be outlawed, but they're only going to outlaw so-called safe abortions. I'm hearing that objection more and more, this kind of leaning toward the threat of back alley illegal abortions in which women might be harmed. And just to go on record here, you and I would agree, anyone who is harmed because of an abortion is a travesty. But these types of objections overlook a very central question. This debate is not really over whether some love women and some hate women. It's not really over whether some should have access to this so-called medical procedure. This debate is really at its base over who counts as a valuable human being and who doesn't. And each of those objections that I just brought up, all of them I've heard in the last couple of weeks, I could simply say, what if we were talking about a toddler? What if we were talking about a 3-year-old right now? Now, this is something that we teach people when we do our trainings. And the reason for that is anytime somebody brings up an objection to the pro-life view, you should ask yourself, would this be a good enough reason to take the life of a 3-year-old? Because we know that toddlers are human. If the answer is no, then we can know that the person we're talking to is assuming that the unborn isn't even human, like you and me, or like the 3-year-old, in which case we need to go to the science. Nobody would advocate for killing a 3-year-old in the name of privacy, or when they get expensive, or when they stand in the way of something that you want, your dreams. Nor do we have problems with laws in our country that make it harder to kill 3-year-olds in case the person seeking to do so might be harmed in the act of trying. So if we can learn to bring conversations back to that central question, what is this unborn entity? Is this a human being like you and me, like a 3-year-old, or not? Then we can begin to make headway. And what that does, whether I'm presenting from the stage or in a conversation with someone, if I'm asking them questions to understand their view and presenting my reasons in a gracious way, it really dissolves a lot of the anger, so we're able to think a little more clearly about what's at stake here.
Megan, would you like to share an anecdote or two about a changed heart and changed mind, you know, as you have made your presentation, whether to a large group or even just in a private conversation?
Sure. Let's see. I can tell hundreds of stories, so I've got to pick out just a few of the more recent ones. I spoke to a group of students last week at Summit Ministries. Two of the young women came up to me afterwards. One of them said she lives in a very liberal area, and at her school, most of her peers are pro-choice. She herself has been reserved to say that she's pro-choice. She grew up in a very Christian home and has called herself pro-life, but she had some objections and some questions that were weighing on her heart. And she said, after hearing the presentation, she said, I just feel so much more comfortable now. I believe that the pro-life view is true, and I believe that I have what I need to be able to have good conversations with my friends and challenge them appropriately over things that they're missing in this conversation. So that was an incredible thing. And for her, it took a great deal of courage just to come up and tell me that. We have to remember when we're having these conversations, we're talking about people's deeply held convictions. And as I said earlier, the conversation that surrounds it is driven by compassion. And so it's very unlikely in a conversation when you present a challenge that you're going to automatically hear someone say, oh, thank you so much for changing my mind. That would be a great day. And in this case, it was. This young woman was courageous enough to hear the reasons I offered and change her mind. I met another young woman who actually...
And just so you know, we have about 30 seconds left. Go ahead.
Got it. I can just tell you that the students who come up who say, I thought that abortion should be allowed in these situations, not in others. Now I see that I was wrong about that. I think that abortion is wrong because it takes the lives of innocent human beings. And I think we have a better story to tell people. So that's the general consensus of what we get when we do our trainings or our conversations. I'm very grateful.
Excellent. Summit.org for more information. Megan Ullman, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you, Jerry. Have a great one.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.